We're in chapter 11 concerning the rising of the dead from Lazarus. He did tarry these 2 days, and he told his apostles that in verse 11 that Lazarus was just asleep. And they said, "Well, Lord, if he's asleep, he's doing well, because that's what a sick person needs is rest." And then he told them plainly that Lazarus dead, but this was for their sake that they might believe. And so when he decided to go on up towards Bethany where Lazarus was, they knew that the Jews were lying in wait to try to kill him. And Thomas said, "Well, let's just go up with him and we'll just die with him." I mean, that was his expression from this. He said, because they knew that something was going to happen. And so when Jesus was coming and getting close to where Jerusalem was, Martha came out to meet him, and she said, "If you had been here, my brother would not have died," in verse 31. And he says, but she said, I know that even now, whosoever thou wast of God, God will give it to thee. And Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Well, Martha says, "I know he'll rise again in the resurrection." I mean, she knew that there was going to be everlasting life, but she wasn't looking for him to raise Lazarus from the dead. "I know that in eventually at the last day he'll rise up." And that's where Jesus says, "I am the resurrection of life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet he shall live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this?" And she said, "Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which will come into the world." And when she had said this, and went her way and called Mary, her sister, secretly, saying, "The Master is come and calleth for thee." Now, Jesus wanted to speak to Mary too. And he wanted to speak to her, he said, secretly. Now, there wasn't nothing. He just didn't want a bunch of people around. He wanted to talk to Mary. They were dear friends. Martha, Mary, and Lazarus were dear friends, and he wanted a chance to talk to her. And so he asked Martha to tell her to come to him. Now notice, and this is where we ended last week, and she said, "The Master calls for thee." As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet into town. He was still out from town where Martha had met him, but was the place where Martha had met him. And the Jews then that were with her in the house and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, "She goeth to the grave to weep." In other words, they were there consoling her, trying to help her because of the death of her brother. And she gets up and starts out, and they think, well, you know, she's going to the grave to grieve over her brother. And so they went along. Then Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him. She fell down at his feet and said unto him, "Lord, thou had been here, my brother had not died." Now, she said exactly the same thing that Martha said. Both of them said when they came to Jesus, "If you'd been here, he wouldn't have died," because they knew Jesus had the power to heal him, or to they didn't realize that Jesus had done this intentionally. He had delayed these 2 days, and then the time he got there it was going to be 4 days before he gets there. He really gets there, and so he wanted to show his power over death like this, and even after somebody had been dead long enough for their bodies to start to decay. And so the others that he raised, you remember, Jairus' daughter and the widow of Nain's son, it was probably the first day. Jairus' daughter, he got there very quickly. You remember they said, they sent word to him, "There's no need for you to come because she's dead." But he went on and he said, "She's not dead, but she sleeps." And he went on. He raised her from the dead. And the widow of Nain's son, he touched the coffin, that, and he arose from that. And they buried him on the first day place of the country. And so they had no preservations like they have now, where they preserve the body to last as, I guess they can make a body last a long time here. But over there, they usually buried them the first day. And so when Mary came to him, she said, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died." When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in his spirit and was troubled. Maybe because that of the lack of faith in him, he was concerned about this. And he said unto them, "Where have you laid him?" They said unto him, "Lord, come and see." And then we read the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. Now, there's only one other time in the Bible that it said that Jesus wept. Does anybody know what that occasion was? That said it was sweat drops. Okay. That's blood. Okay. It doesn't say he wept, but where it really says he wept. No, anybody remember the occasion? It was over the city of Jerusalem. From the book of Luke, the Bible says that Jesus wept over that. When he said, and you read it in Matthew 23, where he says that how he would have taken them like a chicken takes her chicks.
Was he not quoting Jeremiah there?
Huh? It's look at Luke 19:41 is where it was. I don't know that it was a quote. I didn't pick that up, but it could have been. I don't know. But notice it says, when he came near, he beheld the city and wept over it. So it was the time when he was talking about Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, the destruction of the temple and everything. And so that's the only other time that we know that the Bible says that Jesus wept. So then said the Jews, "Behold how he loved him." Of course, when they seen it, they thought that Jesus was weeping because Lazarus was dead. But I think Jesus was weeping for the sake of the Jews, of their unbelief in him. And some of them said, "Could not this man, which opened the eyes of the blind, have caused that, even that this man should not have died?" In other words, it's almost like what Martha and Mary had been saying, "Lord, if you'd been here, he wouldn't have died." But couldn't a man do this? Jesus again, groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. And it was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Most of the burial in that times were in the tombs or the caves. And they would, you remember, Jesus was put in a sepulcher like that. And the stone was rolled away by God. But there would be a huge stone there. And Jesus said to them, "Take ye away the stone." And Martha, the sister of him that was said unto him, "Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he's been dead 4 days." Now, we may think a body doesn't decay in 4 days, but I was telling you last week in class, you see an animal killed on the road, and you leave it there for 4 days and see if you don't get some odor from that animal. But the body does. We're human, we're flesh, and when everything is dead, then it starts to decay very, very soon. And so she said by this time he stinketh because he's been dead for 4 days. And Jesus said unto her, "Said not unto thee that if thou wouldest believest, thou should see the glory of God. Now, he had tried to sort of tell her before, but she had the impression that, of course, this resurrection was going to happen in the last day. And so, then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I know thou hearest me always, but because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. Now, you know one of the important things about this, if Jesus can raise someone that's been dead 4 days, he wouldn't have any trouble raising someone that's been dead 4 years or 40 years or 400 years or 4,000 years. He had that power to do that, and only God can do that. And so someone said, I heard a story on this. I know Marcus heard this. The reason why he called Lazarus by name, if he just said, come forth, all those people in the grave would have come out. But he specified, Lazarus, you come forth. And so Lazarus sinned, and when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound head and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. And Jesus said unto them, loose him and let him go. Now, when they buried people over there, it was like almost like the Egyptians with the mummies. They were wrapped in this linen. Their hands and feet were down like this, and they were wrapped, and their face was wrapped. You know, thing about it, if somebody tried to say Lazarus wasn't dead, I don't think he probably could have breathed through all that wrapping that was on him. And so he had all these clothes on. Then the Jews, which came to Mary, had seen the things which Jesus did, believed on him. But now look at this. But some of them went their way to the Pharisees and told them what things Jesus had done. Isn't that pitiful when you look at that and think of that, to see something like this, and them that they're being so prejudiced and so set in their system of what they were going to do that they just walk away from it. It's amazing. I think of the time, and we'll read a little later on, when they come to get him come to arrest him, and Peter took out the sword and cut off that servant, that kinsman of the high priest's ear, named Malchus. And the book of Luke says he touched it and healed it. What would you do if you was in a mob and you come to get somebody and you see that happen? Would that be something that would make you wonder and back off and say, hey, there's something to this? Yeah. I mean, and even you know, when they come to arrest him, they said, where is he? And he says, I am here. And the Bible says they all fell to the ground. I mean, to me, I don't understand how people can just see it plainly with their eyes. And these people here were there comforting Mary and Martha. They knew that Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. They knew that. Now, the Jews later on, they admit this. They actually admit this. And yet, yes.
Maybe that helps us understand today why people don't believe that the Bible is telling us people who actually saw it didn't believe it. So it shouldn't shock us today when we share the scriptures with people and they don't believe it. You know, and it's right there in black and white. So.
Yes, you're right. You're right. There's people that just... You know, I always thought, and Sometimes my mind wanders and I think things, but I thought if God could let everybody be in hell for 5 minutes, I don't think we'd have any unbelievers.
It seemed to me like it was from the text we just read, it seemed more like God the Father was more like, have you seen my son?
Mm-hmm.
Look at his good works.
Yes. Yes. But, yes. I don't think so, because look at verse 47. Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council and said, "What do we do? For this man doeth many miracles." In other words, they were determined they were going to get rid of this. And if you read on down, notice, and then he says, "If we let this alone, all will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away our place in our nation." And so they were concerned. They knew. Yeah. Yeah. It could have been. They could have gone to tell the Pharisees, "Hey, look, this man truly is from God." And the Pharisees' reaction was, you know, we're not going to believe this. Maybe that could be so. I don't know. But it seems like they were determined that no matter what, that they seen this, and they just were concerned. You know, if we let this go, all men will believe on him. In other words, you know, we're going to lose our position as head of the Jewish people. We can't afford to do this. And so they said, you know, all men will believe on him. The Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. In other words, our position and also our nation. Well, their nation was eventually destroyed by the Romans in AD 70. You know, when they had a system there in the temple, the Romans had a guard or a tower there where the Roman soldiers stayed and watched them to make sure things were done the right way. That's why that they were so concerned about this. The Romans, it's called a decentralized form of government. What they did, they let the people, you know, have some freedom and stuff like this, as long as they didn't conflict the Roman authority or cause an uproar. That's why when we read in Acts 19, when they were at the temple, Diana, and they were causing this uproar, and the people were saying, "Hey, the town clerk said, we need to shut this down because, you know, we're going to be in big trouble with the Romans if we cause a riot here." And so they were concerned about that. And so the Romans actually, they ruled them, but they let them have the freedom to worship and do other things. And so, but they were afraid. Now the Romans will come and they'll take away both our place and our nation. And now one of them, named Caiaphas, being high priest that year, said unto them, "You know nothing at all." Now he was the high priest before, and now he was the high priest this year. He was the high priest when Jesus was crucified. "Nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation perish not." Now, I don't know if God put this in Caiaphas' lips or not. I really don't know. The Bible said he prophesied about this. And I don't know if at first he may have been going to talk about himself. But notice verse 51. This he spake not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for the nation. And not, yes. Mm-hmm. It it could be. It could be God.
He could have been saying that. He might not have known.
Yes. I don't know. Like I say, I don't know for sure if God told him, put the prophecy in his lip to say this or not. But anyway, the way it came out, it was really exactly what was going to happen. He prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation. And not for that nation only, but that also he should gather together in one the children of God that were scattered abroad. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there a prophecy that one will die for the nation in the Old Testament?
I don't know. Do you know, Mark? I don't know. I really don't know. Anyway, he spoke this. And like I say, you know, God, at times, God had people that weren't righteous speak. You remember Balaam, when you talk about Balaam from the Old Testament, went after the reward, and God told him what to say. And so it could have been that God told him this, or it could have been he was just saying this, I don't know, but whatever it was, he said it what was right.
Yeah, he wasn't a good guy.
No, he was not. He was terrible. And so then from that day forth, they took counsel together for to put him to death. And so they're determined now that they're going to go ahead and put Jesus to death if they can. And so that was, you know, when you think of this, it almost started from almost the first miracle that Jesus did. They had a charge against him that they were going to try to put him to death. Because if you read in the book of Mark, and I believe it's maybe Mark 2, where the man was brought in by the four men and they pulled the roof off the house and dropped him down, and Jesus healed him, and they said from that day forth that he blasphemed, and they were determined to put him to death. And so very early in his ministry, they were trying it. And you see how many times that we've read where Jesus walked through the midst of them or escaped from them, you know, because his hour wasn't come yet. They were trying all the time to put him to death. And so they determined then they were going to put him to death. So when they did this, notice, Jesus therefore walked no more openly among the Jews, but went thence in a country near to the wilderness, in a city called Ephraim, and there continued with his disciples. Now, this Ephraim was about, the scholars say, was about 20 miles from Jerusalem. And so he went there. The Jewish Passover was nigh. Now, this is the fourth Passover that we've talked about. So that's how they know how many years Jesus' ministry was on the earth. The first one happened very soon after when he first began his ministry, after he turned the water into wine. We see that there was a Passover at hand. That was probably maybe 6 months after he began. And so there's been three more Passovers, and this is the fourth one, which would be the 3.5 years that most people think that, and this is where most scholars get the theory that Jesus in his ministry worked like 3.5 years or so in his ministry here on earth. And so this Passover is at hand. Many of the country went up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. Now, they didn't have to do this, but many times before these feasts, the Jews would purify themselves to make sure they were worthy to be part of the feast. And so many of the Jews then went up to Jerusalem, get ready for the Passover. And this would be the last Passover that Jesus would be crucified. And so now we're getting close to where the church is going to begin. Because from Passover to Pentecost was how many days? 50 days. So just a matter of less than 2 months, the church is going to begin. When the day of Pentecost came, and that's when Jesus had met, you remember we read in the book of Acts, he had met 40 days with his apostles, teaching them things concerning the kingdom. And then the Spirit fell on the apostles, and the church began then on the day of Pentecost, when they began to speak in all these languages about the wonderful works of God. And that's when Peter convicted them and said that we studied, remember last week we studied where it's said that Peter says, you have taken Jesus, a man approved of God by wonders and signs and miracles, and you have crucified him. You have taken you and you have crucified him. And he said, these signs and things were done, as you know, you know what he done, but yet you've taken and crucified him. And like I say, if they hadn't been guilty, they wouldn't have said, no, we didn't. We crucified a thief, or we crucified an imposter. But they said, what shall we do? What can we do? And that's when Peter told them, and the keys to the church were opened up to the Jews when they were to respond to the gospel of Christ, to repent and to be baptized. And so it's very close. And so they went up to this Passover to purify themselves. Then sought they for Jesus and spake among themselves as they stood in the temple, what think ye that he will come to the feast? Now both the chief priests and the Pharisees had given commandment that if any man knew where he were, he should show it that they might take him. Now these Jewish officials had gave out a command, if any of you see him, you come and let us know.
They knew he was going to be there.
Yeah. And so, but I don't know if this threat here meant that, you remember before, they said, if any of you believe on him or accept him, then you'll be put out of the synagogue. And I don't know if that was here part of this or not. In other words, if you seen him and you didn't tell them, if there would be a penalty for you. Maybe there was a penalty for them. I don't know. But anyway, they put out this warning, if any of you see him, then you come and tell us so that we can take him. Anybody got anything else on chapter 11? It's an interesting chapter. This is the last of the seven miracles that John records that Jesus did. Anybody remember what the miracles were? Let's name them. What are they? Water to wine. Nobleman's son. Healing of the blind man. What?
Raising of Lazarus.
That's four. 5,000. Walking on water. One more. What? The crippled man at Bethsaida. Those are the seven. Now we've got through five of the I Ams where Jesus said, I am. What are they? Remember? The Good Shepherd, the Bread of Life, I'm the Door,
the Light
of the World, and what he said in this chapter, I am the Resurrection and Life. Now there's two more that we're going to study about. Chapter 12, I think it is, or 14, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And chapter 15, he says, I am the vine. So those are the seven I ams. And so John's book is sort of based on those seven miracles and those seven I ams. All right, in chapter 12, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany. Now, Bethany was the home of Lazarus and Mary and Martha, where Lazarus, which he had been dead, whom he had raised from the dead. And they made there they made him a supper, and Martha served. But Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. And so he went to Bethany, and there he was in the home of his friends, and they served a supper. Yes. You know, and Mark brings up a point. You know, when we die, we either go to paradise or torment. I mean, the soul doesn't sleep. But now Lazarus was dead 4 years, 4 days, not 4 years, 4 days. And there's nothing even recorded about what happened to him, where he was. And you know, if I was Lazarus, I would be upset myself. If I had already fought the good fight and won it, I sure wouldn't want to come back to this earth, be brought back alive and come back to this earth and start over again and take a chance on losing. I'm sure he would. Lazarus was strong enough that he wouldn't lose his life. But anyway, I'm just saying, I wouldn't want to take that chance at all. And so... nothing is said about where Lazarus was these 4 days. Now, I don't know. I've often thought that maybe through the work of God that Lazarus didn't know anything about the life after death. I don't know. What do you think? I mean... Yeah.
It's just interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. But we just don't know. But you know, we read just a little bit farther here that the Jews not only determined now to put Jesus to death, but who else were they going to try to put to death? Lazarus. Because, man, he is a living testimony. We need to get rid of him too. And so... But he went to this supper, and they made supper. Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then said one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? Now, Judas, we'll understand, we'll read just in a minute. Judas was the treasurer of the apostles. The Bible says he carried the bag. And so Judas was very, evidently money was something that he was greedy after. And he wasn't really concerned. We read here, look at this, verse 6. This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had to bag and bear what was put therein. And so Judas is one who evidently coveted money. And I'm sure that he probably shortchanged the bag as he was carrying that. But it shows even when he went and sold Jesus for 20 pieces of silver. He was very greedy. And then, but Jesus said, "Let her alone. Against this day of my burying has she kept this. For the poor always you have with you, but you have, but me you have not always." Now, certainly, that's a true statement. We always have people that are poor. And Jesus says, "She did this for the day of my burying." He knew that very soon he was going to die. And so much of the people, the Jews, therefore, knew that he was there. They came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. Now, they had heard about this. Maybe some of the Jews had not witnessed this, but hey, if we get a chance to go see the person that was raised from the dead. But notice, the chief priests consulted how that they might put Lazarus also to death, because that by reason of him, many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. You know, when you think of it, perhaps this was, I don't know how you rate the miracles, but maybe this was perhaps the greatest miracle that Jesus had performed. Nobody had been dead that long. Now, Jesus did some outstanding miracles. Can you imagine speaking to the storm and telling it to peace, be still? Can you imagine just 2 fish and 5 loaves and feeding 5,000 men besides women and children, and there's being 12 baskets left over? I mean, just think of the things he done. This man born blind had never seen at all, and he was completely healed. I mean, it was just amazing. And so, you know, when you talk about the miracles of Jesus and the signs that he did and how the people ought to recognize that, in the book of Matthew, chapter 10, real quick, before you leave. Chapter 11. There was 2 of John's disciples that came to Jesus and said, "John wants to know, are you the one, or is there another one to come after you?" Look what Jesus said. He didn't answer them and said, "Yes, I'm the Son of God." But Jesus answered in verse 4 and said unto them, "Go show John again those things which you do hear and see, that the blind receive their sights, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have the gospel preached to them." And so you go back and you tell John this, and he'll know, I am he, I am the one. Okay, thank you. We'll begin there Wednesday night in chapter 12.